All on board survive a 727's crash landing in Bolivia. Another F-15 pilot has to eject, and the search continues for a missing Japanese balloonist. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, February 4th, 2008. A chartered jetliner carrying over 150 people crash-landed in eastern Bolivia on Friday when stormy weather forced it to turn away from its destination and try for another airport. All on board survived. Photos from local media show a Boeing 727-200 flown by Lloyd Aereo Boliviano Airline, or LAB, in a flooded forest clearing with at least one wing sheared off and a set of landing gear in the water nearby. The Associated Press reports the 727 took off from La Paz, the Bolivian capital, after a delay for unspecified mechanical problems. The plane reportedly encountered fierce storms en route to the northern city of Cobija, then diverted 370 miles south to the eastern lowland city of Trinidad. It was just 3 miles short of the runway when it went down. The flight engineer indicated the plane had only 154 seats, but was carrying 159 passengers and 9 crew members. Most of the passengers were taken to a nearby hospital for review. Several were injured. LAB was privatized in 1996 and has debt and bankruptcy problems in the last few years. It currently runs a skeleton fleet of just 2 aircraft on a charter basis. Another National Guard pilot has bailed out of an F-15, this time a D model, renewing questions about the airworthiness of the aging fighters. Friday's incident involved a Hawaii Air National Guard F-15D Eagle. The Honolulu Advertiser reports the pilot ejected safely 60 miles south of Oahu on Friday afternoon and was quickly recovered by a Coast Guard helicopter. The unidentified pilot was reported in good condition at a local hospital after the incident, suffering only a cut during the ejection. It's not known yet exactly what happened in Friday's incident. Officials say the pilot suddenly experienced difficulty in controlling the plane and started to lose altitude. They say the pilot was at the low end of the minimum safe altitude for ejecting when he made the decision. Searchers with the U.S. Coast Guard are continuing efforts to find a Japanese hot air balloonist who disappeared Thursday while on a trip from Japan to Oregon. The Associated Press reports that 58-year-old world record holder Michio Kanda went missing over the North Pacific, about 435 miles south of Adak Island in the Aleutians. Friends reported last contact Thursday morning, shortly after he took off solo from Tochigi, Japan, bound for Portland. U.S. Coast Guard Petty Officer Levi Reed said Kanda was carrying a survival suit and provisions and a satellite phone and a GPS. 2 Coast Guard cutter ships joined the search on Saturday. Kanda is a father of 3 who works as a supervisor at a government factory that makes school lunches. According to the World Air Sports Foundation, Kanda and teammate Hirosuke Takizawa set the current duration record for a hot air balloon in 1997, flying from Alberta, Canada to Montana in 50 hours, 38 minutes. For his Pacific crossing, Kanda had intended to fly at 30,000 feet to take advantage of jet stream winds of well over 100 knots. Photos from the scene confirm the aircraft lost in a crash near Mount Airy, North Carolina Friday morning is N57 Whiskey Romeo, a Raytheon Beech C-90A King Air turboprop registered to Blue Sky Airways based in Dallas, Georgia. Officials with Surrey County Emergency Services confirm there were no survivors. The 6 people on board were reportedly heading for a hunting trip in Virginia. Witnesses told local media the King Air missed its first approach to Mount Airy Airport and was circling back when it crashed for as yet undetermined reasons. Authorities say weather may have been a factor. The aircraft came down in a residential area, but there were no injuries reported on the ground. Up next on ANN, a woman who worked to make kids safer online has died with her son in a plane accident. A congressman is outraged over an airport's treatment of returning Marines. And a pilot tests his insurance coverage in Fort Lauderdale. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply Canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 4th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. A successful businesswoman and her son lost their lives in the Friday night crash of a Cessna 525 Citation jet near Augusta, Maine. Jeanette Simons and her 10-year-old son, Ballon, took off from Augusta State Airport at 5:45 p.m. Eastern Time Friday, bound for Lincoln, Nebraska. Simons created and became CEO of Industrious Kid, a social networking site for young children which can be monitored by parents, and which was inspired by her son's desire to get online. The Augusta Sun-Journal reports she was also the owner and pilot of the aircraft. Flying under an IFR flight plan, Simons made radio contact with departure control at Portland International Jetport after takeoff. Soon after, at about 3,000 feet, she declared an emergency due to an apparent instrument failure. FAA spokesman Jim Peters said the controller attempted to vector the Citation back to Augusta, but lost contact with the jet and then saw it descend rapidly on radar. The debris field was about 300 yards long, located about 10 miles out from the airport. Simons and her son reportedly arrived in Maine last weekend for a week-long ski camp at Sugarloaf, USA. Her 8-year-old daughter stayed home in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. The Department of Transportation has ruled personnel at Oakland International Airport did not act illegally when they denied 200 Marines and soldiers returning from Iraq access to the passenger terminal last September. DOT Inspector General Calvin L. Scoville says the fault lies with the Department of Defense and Homeland Security officials. On September 27th, as the troops stopped over at Oakland on their way home to their base in Hawaii, the Washington Times reports airport officials denied them access to the terminal. Concerns included inadequate preparations to handle a large group of military personnel and the number of weapons which might have been brought into the terminal. One Marine reported the incident to Florida Congressman John L. Mica, ranking member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and said the whole mess, quote, felt like being spit on, unquote. But Scoville noted the contract allowing military layovers at Oakland, quote, did not require that military personnel have access to the airport terminal. It only required that military personnel be allowed to deplane and stretch their legs on stops lasting over 1 hour, unquote. Mica called the treatment of the Marines shocking, quote, we just need to get some regular order of the process so we don't have a recurrence of what we saw happen here, unquote. When airport officials use the term bumper cars to describe an incident, you know it can't be good. A Rockwell Sabreliner 265 business jet reportedly struck the propeller of a Cessna Caravan while taxiing on the ramp at Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport Friday afternoon, setting off a chain of events that resulted in four damaged aircraft covered in foam. Nobody was injured. The South Florida Sun-Sentinel reports it was told by airport spokesman Ted Lawson that the Sabreliner apparently lost control when it hit the caravan's prop and spun into a parked Sabreliner and then a third Sabre that was under tow. All the planes were sprayed with foam by the Fort Lauderdale Fire Department's hazmat team after leaking fuel was spotted. NTSB and FAA will investigate. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association built a satellite TV studio at its Maryland headquarters, and AOPA President Phil Boyer had to press it into service last week. On Monday, Boyer found himself responding to a Phoenix TV reporter's expose of lax general aviation security a week before Super Bowl 42 in Glendale, Arizona. The reporter took a camera crew to five small airports in the area and discovered three unlocked aircraft. Boyer turned the blame for the bad PR back on careless pilots. Quote, I can't compete with pictures of a reporter walking up to your plane and opening an unlocked door. In the court of public opinion, we lose that argument every time. Unquote. Boyer acknowledged that GA has been under the microscope ever since September 11th, and, whether it's fair or not, will likely remain so throughout our lifetimes. AOPA suggests locking the doors of idle planes, keeping them in locked hangars, and using visible deterrents such as a prop or wheel lock. Boyer adds, quote, doing our part in a visible way demonstrates our resolve to the non-flying public, unquote. Still ahead, Airbus claims an environmental first. A Virginia regional fly-in returns, missing three letters from its old name. And an aviation museum honors Snoopy and his Sopwith. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, February 4th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Boeing and Virgin Atlantic have talked for months about a test flight using a commercial airliner powered by alternative fuel, but now Airbus can claim it as a first. On Friday, an A380 took off from Filton, England for a successful three-hour flight to Toulouse, France, powered by synthetic liquid fuel processed from natural gas. Shell International Petroleum provided the fuel, called Shell GTL, that's for gas to liquid. The company says the technology can help reduce local emissions and encourage sustainable mobility. Airbus says GTL provides real benefits in fuel efficiency and emissions, and is almost entirely sulfur-free. The fuel may be synthesized using a method called the Fischer-Tropsch process, which can extract usable fuel from almost any carbon-based material. Virgin Atlantic still plans to fly the world's first commercial jet flight powered by biofuel by the end of this month. That flight, from Heathrow to Amsterdam, will use biofuel sourced from either soybeans or algae. Stephen Vella, a management advisor at Qatar Airways, told The Economist that airline hopes to start using GTL on a small number of commercial flights in 2009. Aero News has learned the 10-year-old Virginia Regional EAA fly-in will now be known as the Virginia Regional Festival of Flight and will be held this year on June 14th and 15th. Event organizers say the new name complies with a directive from the Experimental Aircraft Association to drop references to the EAA in their names. The change came after EAA was hit with the better part of a $10.5 million judgment last year, stemming from a July 1999 fatal takeoff crash at the Northwest Regional Fly-In in Arlington, Washington. Despite significant evidence, including the NTSB's probable cause report, that the accident was the result of a departure stall, and in no way due to any actions on the part of EAA or fly-in organizers. The EAA stressed it will continue to show support through promotional consideration and by offering EAA forums and other programs at regional fly-ins. The 2008 event will also move to the Suffolk Executive Airport. Organizers say the event outgrew its former location at Dinwiddie County Airport, and the move will offer exciting possibilities for increasing the full range of fly-in activities. The event was on hiatus in 2007 to accommodate that move. Cartoonist Charles Schulz is being honored for his unique contribution to aviation with an exhibit at the Evergreen Aviation Museum at McMinnville, Oregon. Schulz was the former Army sergeant who penned the Peanuts comic strip. He first depicted Charlie Brown's pet beagle Snoopy taking flight atop his doghouse to do battle with the Red Baron in a strip published on Sunday, October 10, 1965. The traveling exhibit, Snoopy as the World War I Flying Ace, opened last week at McMinnville, showing 40 of Snoopy's most exciting adventures in his doghouse, which became a Sopwith Camel biplane. 40 digital prints from the original drawings done by Schulz are on display, along with accompanying photographs of the artist. The Snoopy exhibit will be on display at McMinnville until March 10th, and children's activities will be featured on Saturdays as part of the normal admission price. And that's a pretty incredible deal, especially since they'll let you stand inside the Spruce Goose and walk alongside a real SR-71 Blackbird while you're there. Finally, today is the 40th anniversary of the day the Beatles recorded the song Across the Universe. It's also roughly the 50th anniversary of the founding of NASA in July of 1958 and the launch of the first U.S. artificial satellite, Explorer 1, in January of that year. You get three guesses how NASA is going to celebrate. Yep, at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time this evening, a command from the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California, will start a transmission over NASA's deep space network of Across the Universe, sending it literally across the universe. The transmission is being aimed at the North Star, Polaris, 431 light years from Earth. Former Beatles Sir Paul McCartney sent a note expressing excitement that the song, which was penned by his late bandmate John Lennon, will commemorate the anniversary. Quote, "Amazing. Well done, NASA. Send my love to the aliens. All the best, Paul." Unquote. Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, characterized the song's transmission as a significant event. Quote, "I see that this is the beginning of the new age in which we will communicate with billions of planets across the universe." Unquote. Today has also been declared Across the Universe Day by Beatles fans to commemorate the anniversaries. As part of the celebration, the public around the world has been invited to participate in the event by simultaneously playing the song at the same time it's transmitted by NASA. Many of the senior NASA scientists and engineers involved in the effort say that they are among the group's biggest fans. Really? Have they looked past the catchy space travel title and actually read the lyrics? The chorus repeats four times, "Nothing's gonna change my world." Is that really what NASA wants to say? And that's the latest from Aero News. I know, I can hear you saying it now. Paul, you're overthinking this. Fair enough. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my weekly talk with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves deals with mountain flying and one of the most dangerous things you can do when shooting an instrument approach to minimums. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.